Good afternoon. I hope everyone's having a good weekend. Welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we'll talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today, on the docket, we're going to talk about the ongoing debate regarding marijuana. It seems like marijuana may soon be available to New Yorkers on a limited basis for medicinal use. I know that statement sounds very vague, and that's for a reason, because nothing has been decided in Albany yet, but everyone is talking about it. Just yesterday, State Senator Tom O'Mara, conservative Republican from Western New York, became the fourth Republican lawmaker to come out publicly in support of a plan to legalize medical marijuana. Three other senators, George Maziarz, Mark Grisanti, and Joe Robach, all from the western region of the state, have announced their public support for medical marijuana. Those senators have said they would support some version of the Compassionate Care Act, a bill co-sponsored by the Independent Democratic Conference and Senator Dianne Savino. Recent polls show a majority of New Yorkers of both political parties support medical marijuana, but Senate co-leader Dean Skelos has not committed to bringing the act to the Senate floor for a vote at this time. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Dwight Merriam of the law firm of Robinson & Cole, with offices in several states, including three here in New York. His resume is extensive, including serving as an adjunct professor at the University of Connecticut School of Law and at Quinnipiac University School of Law. He's often quoted in the media across the country, and he is an authority on medical marijuana and the law, and even has a new book on the subject, soon to be published by the American Bar Association. But first, I'd like to bring in Professor Richard Klein. He's a professor of criminal law at Toro Law Center, and he's also an expert in what's going on here in New York. Welcome, Professor Klein.
Thanks very much. I thought maybe in the beginning I could just give an overview of the laws concerning marijuana in New York State and just what the impact of those laws are. I think if we look at marijuana use, it's one of those examples where the politicians are just behind the will of the people. It's clear now, not just regarding medical marijuana, but a recent poll showed that 82% of those who were polled believe that small amounts of marijuana possession should just be decriminalized, and those who are less than 29 years old at even a higher rate than that. But we do continue to arrest people for marijuana. The most recent statistics have 94% of those who were arrested in the state came from New York City, or those arrests occurred in New York City, and of those arrests, 82% were of blacks or Latinos. So the impact of the marijuana laws in New York State are really very significant for a certain percent of the population of the state, and those tend to be minority people who live in New York City.
So, of course, we're really talking about two different issues here.
Yes.
One is the criminalization or the decriminalization of marijuana in general, and the second aspect is whether or not marijuana should be legalized for the limited medicinal purposes with the Compassionate Care Act.
Yes, I think those who oppose its use for medical purposes fear that if it's permitted for medical purposes, A, there'll be a lot of abuse, and then people will be getting it for basically recreational use. But C, B, it just leads naturally to a loosening of the laws and can well lead to decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana for recreational use as well.
So, are you up on exactly what they're proposing in Albany?
Yes. Well, what the governor is proposing and what this most recent, as you said, the bill that's sponsored by Compassionate Care or very similar to what they put forth as model legislation throughout the country, yes, I am. I still think there are problems with that bill as well. And I think it doesn't quite cover as many examples of people needing medical marijuana and they're being able to get it in New York, as is true in some of the other states. 20 states now have legalized the medical use of marijuana.
And so from a legalization perspective, just for medicinal purposes, is there a list of the kinds of conditions that somebody has to have or prove by a physician in order to be eligible to get the marijuana?
Yes, and I think it varies. What Cuomo had put forth is different from now what some of the Republican senators are in favor of, and what the actual language will be that that gets into a bill that's enacted, and what hospitals will be able to have that marijuana, and how they're going to get the marijuana, and who's going to be able to use the marijuana. All that is subject to what always happens with legislation in New York, a lot of horse trading back and forth, and some people give in on this and some people give in on that. But I think what's most important is that if we start with a bill that's not perfect and that doesn't cover all those who could well gain from the medical use of marijuana, it still is a beginning. And then as we see the difficulties with the legislation, it can be amended and broadened.
So from your perspective, is this really about the compassionate use of a drug, or is this about a regulatory regime that is potentially revenue generating for the state coffers?
Well, I think there's no reason one excludes the other. If we look at all the money that's come into Colorado and Washington states, the two states that now permit marijuana for recreational use, there's a tremendous amount of money. And New York is strapped for money, as many other states are as well. So the fact that it would bring in money and also provide real help for people who need the relief that they can get from medical marijuana, if they go hand in hand, fine. We don't have to say that one function would be served by the bill and not the other. I think they both are. And that's good. It's very nice to have legislation that ought to be enacted just on its face, and then also have that legislation bring in some much-needed revenue into the state.
And so what about the federalism issues here? Because we've got a federal statute that says that marijuana is a drug, it's an illegal drug, and you're supposed to be prosecuted if caught with it, and now you have states saying that it's allowed either recreationally or medicinally.
And that's a fascinating issue. I think both Obama and his attorney general, Eric Holder, have said comments to the effect of, we got bigger fish to fry than worry about small-time use of recreational marijuana. But the Department of Justice has issued guidelines when they would not permit states to allow the recreational use of marijuana, even though in those states such use is legal. For example, if it's used by minors, or if the marijuana use is tied to organized crime or gang situations, if it's sent from one state where it is legal into another state, if the marijuana is used on any national park. So in Colorado, one can use recreational marijuana anywhere in the state, and the Department of Justice is not going to get involved, but it cannot be used on any of the national parks within that state. And no marijuana can be grown on any of the public lands. And also, they want to make sure, the DOJ, Department of Justice, wants to make sure that there's no connection between the distribution of marijuana in that state and the use of firearms and violence in general. So basically, it's a fascinating issue of just hands off. I mean, the Department of Justice realizes that it wouldn't be a popular view for them to say that, well, even though these people in these states have, through a public referendum, now supported laws decriminalizing the recreational use of marijuana, we're going to send our federal officials in and arrest people who are complying with those state laws.
Right. And so I guess another interesting question, separate and apart from the recreational use, let's just say it's a state that allows the use for medicinal purposes. What if you have a prescription, but you're traveling from one state that allows it to another state that does not?
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to have it filled in the state that does not allow it.
Well, separate from having it filled, what about using it if you have it in your possession?
Yes, I think just like with any controlled substance, if you're in legal use of it, I think generally the laws would be, if you're in legal use of it in one state and you bring it into another state and it is for medical purposes, that then I'd find it very unusual for this other state to arrest someone who was in possession of any kind of medication, and that would include marijuana, that they had legally gotten in the state in which they reside.
So in closing, do you have any predictions for New York?
Yeah, I mean, I think the writing is on the wall when it comes to both recreational use and the use of marijuana for medical purposes. It might not happen in the next couple of months, even though the legislature we know just has a couple of months for this session. I think something is very likely to pass. But if it doesn't happen this year, it's certainly going to happen within the next year or two. And I think with the recreational use as well, even though the Republicans have not permitted a vote on the Democrats' proposal to decriminalize up to 15 grams of marijuana when it's used in public. I think that's going to happen within the next year or two as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Professor Klein.
And my pleasure.
Please stay with us, because coming up, we'll be talking to Dwight Merriam, a lawyer and commentator, to give us a national view of this debate. Stay with us. You're listening to On the Docket with Torah Law Dean Patricia Salkin on 103.9 Long Island News. Welcome back to On the Docket. I'm here with Richard Klein, professor of criminal law at Torah Law Center, and we're talking about the marijuana debate. We're thrilled to have Dwight Merriam joining us. He's a law professor, an expert, really, on marijuana and the law. You may have seen him on TV or quoted in the many articles that he appears in related to a host of topics on land use, religion and the law, and now medical marijuana. Thank you for joining us, Dwight.
Happy to be here.
So, Dwight, can you give us a national perspective about what's going on across the country in terms of the law and marijuana?
Well, of course, as you know and you've heard, we have 20 states that have legalized medical marijuana, and two states, Colorado and Washington State, which have decriminalized it and legalized it for recreational use. The most recent states to adopt laws in this area, which I think are important to note because they reflect the experience of the early states, and those are Connecticut in 2012, Delaware in 2011, Illinois just this last year, 2013, Massachusetts 2012, and New Hampshire again just this last year. So very quickly states are coming online. There are a few states considering it now, but I guess the point I want to make right at the outset here, Dean Salkin, is that we're in this situation of 20 separate states with 20 separate sets of laws and 20 separate producer systems because marijuana, cannabis, remains a Schedule I drug under federal law under the Controlled Substances Act. And I think our listeners today need to know what that means. What that means is there are five schedules under the federal law, and the Schedule I under the Controlled Substances Act is for those most dangerous drugs that have no medical use. The federal government's determined that cannabis has no medical use, and it puts it right there with heroin and crystal meth. Breaking Bad, you know, the TV show. That's where it is. It's drugs. Medical marijuana is classified as a drug that has a high potential for abuse, no currently accepted medical use, and a lack of accepted safety for use of the drugs. So that's why the big pharmacy companies are not involved in this.
So how is it that the federal government can say that it has no medicinal value, but 20 states have found otherwise?
Well, that's the beauty of federalism, isn't it, Dean Salkin? This is really an exercise in federalism. The states were always the great places where experiments took place. So this is kind of an interesting exercise, but it is kind of inefficient in terms of regulation, quality control, and the like, to have 20 states with their own systems. But that's what most people don't realize, that it is because the federal government has refused to recognize its potential medical use. And I'm not an advocate one side or the other. I don't have any personal or professional opinion. I do represent one of the four companies that has been selected in Connecticut to be a producer. I am, as you know, writing a book for the ABA on it with Professor Jack Minan in San Diego. But, I don't have an opinion one way or the other as to whether its medical use except to say that the literature, I think, is pretty apparent when you do look at it.
All right, so let's go and talk about some of the other legal ramifications. In the last segment, Professor Klein really focused on the criminalization aspect. But I think that you have identified a host of other laws and issues that this might impact.
Well, the one closest to home for you, Dean Salkin, a member of the bar of the state of New York, and for yours truly, a member of the bar in two states, is what we do in counseling people in this business a violation of our ethical rules? And, you know, if you read the plain language of the ethical rules, they do say that lawyers are not permitted to violate any federal or state or local laws. So there is a lot of activity underway right now across the country. Colorado has petitioned its judicial branch to amend the rules of professional conduct to not only make it possible for lawyers in that state to ethically represent people in this business, but also, you ready for this, for their lawyers to smoke marijuana. Same going on in Washington State, where King County, Washington, has already amended its ethical rules to allow their lawyers to make recreational use. So that's just one area. Of course, the other, another big one is banking. Where finally, the Department of the Treasury Financial Crimes Enforcement Network issued guidance on February 14th, and that's how your listeners can go find it by using one of the search engines, finally helped straighten out in a long guidance memo how it is possible to use the federal banking system to handle money, because up until now, banks refuse to take the money from growers or dispensers.
Even,
so those are
even
two big areas right there.
Even the growers and the dispensers from the medical marijuana states as opposed to the
yes.
recreational use?
Yes. Yes, because it potentially violated federal money laundering laws. There are so many issues, Dean Salkin. Just try this one. You are prescribed medical marijuana in the state of Maine, which is a state where it's legal. You're an Iraq war veteran. You have PTSD. It's indicated for PTSD. And you go to a state school. There's a case there where a person in that exact situation could not take the marijuana cannabis prescription on campus because of the federal and state laws regarding drug-free school zones.
Interesting. So, you know, on one hand, we're talking about the legislative side and the public policy side. Then we've got a whole bunch of statutes that are not consistent. And now are you seeing a growing number of reported decisions, case law?
No, there's not a lot of case law floating around on this, but there are many things that we need to address. Another situation, you are the civilian spouse of a military member. You have multiple sclerosis, also indicated for medical cannabis. You have a prescription. You're in a state where it's legal. You can't have that prescription on the military base. You are someone who is having chemotherapy, and you have wasting disease. You're losing weight because of the chemotherapy. You are in a state where it's legal. You're in Delaware. You say to your spouse, part of my bucket list is to see the Grand Canyon. You can't go to the Grand Canyon with your prescription. Why? Because you're in a national park, a federal installation, a federal property, where it is illegal. So there are a myriad of questions, a myriad of problems that still have to be answered for this medical cannabis to be effectively both cultivated, dispensed, possessed, and used in a responsible way. I would suggest that I know here in New York we're talking about how we might do this. take a look at what Connecticut has done. I think you go to the Department of Consumer Protection, their medical marijuana site, and I think they have done the best job. I've read all the laws in all the states across the country, and I think Connecticut is indeed a model of how to do this.
So can you just quickly give us a couple of examples of the kinds of things that are contained in just various state laws without specifying which state it's in? But
yeah,
what would a statute cover?
Right. I think that you want to limit the number of growers. Connecticut has from 3 to 10. They picked 4. There's tremendous variance. In Colorado, in Boulder County, Colorado, there are more medical marijuana dispensaries in Boulder County than there are Starbucks and liquor stores combined.
Incredible.
In Los Angeles, there are over 1,000 dispensaries. They're trying to get them down to 100. Under Connecticut's law, 3 to 5 dispensaries in the entire state will be approved. So you got to figure out, you got to start. You know what, Dean Selkin? It's a planning problem.
It all comes down to land use, doesn't it?
It does. It does. No, you have to find out how many people need this drug. Then you have to find out how many producers you need to provide the supply necessary to meet those patient needs. And then you have to decide on a distribution system that meets those needs but doesn't turn it into a circus. And Colorado is a circus, I've got to say. And Connecticut's process and the more recent states have done a much better job than the pioneering states of Colorado and California have.
Your prediction for the future, will the rest of the states join the 20 that have already legalized it in some fashion?
I doubt it. If you look at the distribution of the states, the Deep South, the Southeast, the Gulf states, they're not in here. I doubt they're going to go in. They look at this conservatively. They don't look at the advantages that cannabis has and how it's indicated. And you had a judge there in New York, as you recall, that was dying of pancreatic cancer, who used marijuana very effectively to help him in the last few months of his life. So it's kind of a shame, but no, I don't think all that many states are going to follow suit here.
Well, and there you have it. That's all the time we have today. So I want to thank Sora Law Professor Richard Klein and Dwight Merriam of Robinson & Cole in Connecticut and New York. Thank you both for joining us. And don't forget, On the Docket airs every Sunday at 4:30 on 103.9 Long Island News. So until next Sunday, have a terrific week.